When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
All the way from Providence, Rhode Island, in the Minute with Mary studio, welcome to the Potterverse. It's a podcast dedicated to the book and film universe of Harry Potter. So grab your favorite wands and time turners. Let's step into the night and pursue that flighty temptress adventure. And welcome back. My name is Mary Larson.
My name is Blake, and I am a Pisces, so I definitely don't have the emotional range of a teaspoon.
You've got the emotional range of an ocean.
Yes, it's if there was like Niagara Falls of emotion, that would be me. So, you know, it's one of those things that I'm proud of, but it's also certainly one of those aspects of my personality that it's a real burden.
No.
It's okay. It's okay. I don't mind saying it. It's a real burden. So for those of you who are just like me, especially you Pisces out there, oh boy, you know what I'm talking about. You feel all the things the way that I feel them. And that's not easy.
You wanna know what's crazy, Blake?
What's that?
Ron's birthday, Ron Weasley.
Okay.
His birthday is March 1st.
Is it really?
Which, oddly enough, makes him a Pisces as well.
Attaboy, good there old Ron. Go. A newfound respect for Ron. Usually we Pisces, we can smell each other normally. Mm-hmm. But yeah, definitely did not know that Ron was a fellow fish.
Here's the scoop. Hermione says he has the emotional range of a teaspoon.
But he definitely does not.
No. I mean, let's be real. Deathly Hallows. Hallows Ron. All the emotions.
So many.
His feelings of when he wants to join the Quidditch team, all the emotions, okay? Yeah. Ron feels his feels, just like you do, Blake.
Yeah. So this chapter, Marvin, this chapter is something. I don't know. I'm not sure how much there is to talk about in this.
There's a lot, Blake.
Well, I mean, obviously we have the stuff with the snake, and I get it. And then we have that fantastic conversation. Oh, and when I say fantastic, I mean straight up one of my favorite conversations in all of Harry Potter. Just because it is so fantastically real.
Yeah.
And each one of those characters, I absolutely buy all of those responses.
I agree. We're talking about the kiss talk.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes. It's so great.
It is so great. Well, I know that we're going to delve into that, the wet, sloppy kiss, the snogging, but I'm going to use a different quote for this chapter just because I know we're going to delve into the snogging later. Sure. Well, Hagrid, she turned to look up at him again, speaking once more in that loud, slow voice. I think I've got enough to be getting along with. You will receive, she mimed, taking something from the air in front of her, the results of your inspection. She pointed at the clipboard. In 10 days' time, she held up 10 stubby little fingers. Then her smile, wider and more toad-like than ever before, beneath her green hat, she bustled from their midst, leaving Malfoy and Pansy Parkinson in fits of laughter. Hermione actually shaking with fury, and Neville looking confused and upset.
Gotta say, Pansy Parkinson, oh, one of the best characters. Love her.
As much
as I hate JFF, I love Pansy Parkinson.
I think if you were a character in this series, you would be Pansy.
It would be her.
Yes. Yes. We have found you. Because you're not Draco.
No. I'm definitely not.
You want to know why you're not Draco?
Why?
I don't think you're bold enough to be Draco.
What do you mean?
Like, I don't think you would insert yourself into the trouble.
Oh, no.
Say this. Like, I don't think you're sassy enough to be Draco.
Definitely not. Nope. I would be like, ain't my problem. Not my chair, not my problem.
Yeah, you're Pansy.
I'm totally. I will laugh at you to the best of my ability and just totally rank on you, but I'm not going to get myself involved.
Oh my gosh.
And you know what the funny thing too is, Mary?
Tell me. Many
of the listeners, probably most, aren't going to get this reference, but Mary, I know you will.
Okay.
And that is, every time I think of Umbridge, especially in the book, not so much the film, but the book, mm-hmm. I think of your old boss, the one with the hands.
Yeah.
And Mary had a mm-hmm. boss that was very much Umbridge.
Yeah.
And I love the stories that Mary has about this. I think we'll probably keep them.
Yes.
We'll keep them.
We shall.
Unanimous, if you will. Not unanimous. Anonymous. Not unanimous, Blake. Oh, my God. But yeah, no, just this real mean, awful, horrible person.
Yes.
So that's what I think of.
We all have had an Umbridge in our lives.
Yeah, so. Horrible boss.
Yes. Well, a little recap for you for this chapter. It is, of course, chapter 21 in Order of the Phoenix, titled The Eye of the Snake. And this is the class in which Hagrid is observed by Umbridge, and she does this wretched thing where she...
Oh, wait, hold on. We were supposed to do the sound.
Oh, sorry.
All right, hold on. Sorry. Wait, sorry. It's been a little bit.
It's been a minute.
Been a little bit. All right, hold on.
I solemnly swear that I'm up to no good.
Okay, now go ahead.
Okay, chapter 21, Order of the Phoenix, The Eye of the Snake. This is the chapter in which Hagrid gets observed by Umbridge because, remember, he's been gone all year. So she's in here making fun of him left and right with the other Slytherins.
Yeah.
And also we get the new three Quidditch players joining the Gryffindor team.
Yep.
Ginny makes her debut, of course, is there. The Dumbledore's army meets for the last time before Christmas break. We get a little snogging action, including some Harry Potter. Have a very Harry Christmas baubles. Thank you very much, Dobby.
What I would love to know what entails a very Harry Christmas.
Yeah.
Like, oh, man.
Anyway, there's a slobbering... snogging session, and then sadly it ends in Harry being a snake, essentially mortally wounding Arthur Weasley. It goes from wee Hogwarts.
Almost.
Yeah.
Mortally wounded.
Okay, yeah, like near mortal.
Yeah.
Okay? So wee Hogwarts.
More of a maim than a mortal wound.
Hardcore maiming.
Yeah.
In snake form. There you go. So this chapter, I love how Blake was like, there's not a lot to talk about.
No, there is. And I said there was the snake thing and we have the snogging thing. But aside from that, I don't really see a whole ton.
Okay. First off, there's bewitched snowballs. What do you mean there's not a whole ton? It's freaking Christmas. I love our notes that we write for the chapter analysis.
Uh-huh.
Because
what?
yours are like really deep.
They tend to be, yes.
Mine literally. What does this one say? Read this. No, what does it say?
Snowballs, magic, we run.
Because you know we say wee magic,
right.
So this includes just once again building out this amazing universe, and Fred and George are just up to their antics.
Hey, you want
to
hear my first note?
Please.
Hagrid is able to validate Harry's lived experience in an extremely meaningful way by giving him proof that he's not crazy.
And that, my friends, is our podcast. Wrapped up.
A winner. Oh, man. That is how we podcast here at Mary and Blake Media. That's how we do.
Okay. So it starts off snowy. Fred and George, as I said, up to their antics. Ron
doing what
is
they do.
Proud of his prefect duties.
Why wouldn't he be?
And Hermione is talking about trying to give Hagrid the lesson plans that she wrote. Or she said, at least just follow Grubbly Plank's old lessons. Mm-hmm. And I have a question for you. This was also in my notes.
Okay.
What does Grubbly Plank do now that she's no longer needed?
Good point. Does she go like on, does she Does she get unemployment?
Does she get unemployment?
Yeah.
I mean, let's be real. She was there long enough. She was there for pretty much half the school year.
Mm-hmm.
Where did she live? She obviously wasn't living in Hagrid's house. So part of me wonders, is Grubbly Plank the catch-all substitute that lives on the Hogwarts grounds? Because there's 2 feet of snow right now. There's a massive snowstorm. So you're just not going to get any old person popping in from Hogsmeade
right.
to come on in and substitute, you know, when Professor Sprout has a cold or McGonagall needs to go do something here or there. There needs to be a live-in substitute teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's Grubbly Plank. And she's usually not needed,
okay.
as we never really hear of other people being super sick. But on the flip side, when Lupin was sick, Snape filled in.
Yeah, right?
So was Grubbly Plank kind of like when they hire a maternity leave sub and you just know it's an extended sub and is there a special little cottage? But what does she do otherwise? Does she go and substitute teach other magical care of creatures? Does she have a diverse portfolio where she can substitute teach other things? Or was she really upset? Was she hankering for this job, hoping that she could now become the magical care of creatures teacher? And did she also have to be the groundskeeper at the same time?
That's a good question.
Keeper of the keys. I mean.
Yeah, sure.
Did she also have to like take care of all of the rest of Hagrid's duties, or was it just teaching?
Someone here on YouTube says she's retired, I think. She only comes back to help Dumbledore.
Love this. Love this so very much.
Right. Like she goes back to like taking care of her own plants.
I hope she's a diva like how Slughorn is. You know, oh, I want Professor Memuris,
yeah.
old
yeah.
office. Da 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 da. Like I hope she comes in and she's like, Dumbledore, I'll come.
It's madness, I tell you.
Half a year. But you're paying me the annual rate.
Yeah.
Plus PTO.
Oh, of course.
All the PTO.
So much PTO.
And the stock options, double it.
In fact, do some stock buybacks mm-hmm. so we can up the stock price as much as we can before I get equity in the school.
So they go to the Forbidden Forest for their class with Hagrid.
Mm-hmm.
And Malfoy is the one that kind of pops up. Because, you know, they say they're going to be going to the woods. And he's like, oh, Hagrid says, we're working in here today. Hagrid called happily to the approaching students, jerking his head back at the dark trees behind him. A bit more sheltered. Anyway, they prefer the dark. What prefers the dark? Harry heard Malfoy say sharply to Crabbe and Goyle, a trace of panic in his voice. What did he say prefers the dark? Did you hear? And
that might be me.
And in this moment, I know why Malfoy for sure isn't a Gryffindor, because he is not brave.
No, not at all. Definitely not brave. Although, like later on in the books, well, all right. We all know that him wanting to off Dumbledore isn't the nicest, greatest thing of all time. What?
He doesn't. I mean, yeah, I agree, Blake. What? Not the nicest, greatest thing of all time. Fact.
So, but is it still brave for him to even take on that assignment and do what he did? Again, within context.
No, I wouldn't call it brave. I still think it's like part of the ambition.
I think it takes little balls to. It takes
says the Slytherin. Yes, Blake. It does take balls to try to kill someone. Yes, Blake. Fact.
Yeah.
I don't think balls equals bravery.
Was he scared? Do you think?
Yes.
Do you still think he did it in despite it being scared?
I think part of bravery isn't necessarily that it's like selfishly driven.
But being brave is being scared, but still doing the thing despite being scared.
Okay. Well, we'll come back to that because I appreciate that simplified translation.
Yeah. Again, I'm not saying I'm right.
Complexities to bravery.
I'm just saying that I think there's room for some conversation.
There,
perhaps
sure.
A little bit of interpretation.
What I do love about this is, from what we know, no other student has really been deep dark into the Forbidden Forest, aside from the core kids that we know, including mm-hmm. Malfoy, who went there for his first year.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, I'm poking a little fun at him. Ooh, what's in the dark? But he's been there. And he's seen some crazy, bad, scary stuff. And he's known how daunting it could be.
Did he see Voldemort?
He ran away.
Right. I don't think he saw him.
No, but like he was hearing about this thing sucking unicorn blood.
Yeah, and I feel like that would be one of those things that you don't forget.
Especially for someone who has a unicorn hair in his wand.
Right? Oh.
Took that a little personally to heart, you know?
Not great, Bob.
Spot in his heart. That messed him up. Be like seeing your favorite animal be murdered.
Yeah.
What's your favorite animal?
Lion.
Oh. Well, yeah.
I hate snakes, oddly enough. I hate snakes and spiders. Out on both. Out on both. Snakes don't got legs and they still move. How's that even a thing? How's that even a thing?
What do you mean, how's it a thing?
How is it a thing? They don't got legs. How do they move?
Physics.
They don't got wings.
Physics.
Well, yes.
And the friction.
I understand.
I'm glad you do.
I'm just saying. It's ridiculous.
Okay.
It freaked me out, man.
Okay. Another thing in this conversation that I love, though, Malfoy keeps going back and forth where he's asking all these questions. All right, I've been saving this trip forever. And Malfoy, and you're sure they've been trained, have you? Said Malfoy, panic in his voice, even more pronounced now. Only it wouldn't be the first time you would have brought wild stuff to class, would it? And Hagrid, of course they're trained, he says, scowling. So what happened to your face then? Demanded Malfoy. Mind your business. Now, if you finish asking stupid questions, follow me. And as a teacher, I could tell you,
Mary's had one of those moments.
You cannot say, now, if you've finished asking stupid questions,
mm-hmm.
follow me. It is a good thing Umbridge didn't overhear that, because if she overheard that in 2024,
oh boy,
Hagrid would have gotten written
up. There'd be a get together of the PTO and the rest of the school board.
Yeah.
That'd be bad news, man.
Yes. I said something. I didn't say a swear.
It was swear adjacent.
I mean, but not really swear.
Yeah, but would you be okay if your kid went ahead and said that?
I mean, I wouldn't be happy, but I'd be like, wow, that's like some old, you know, old-fashioned talk. I was teaching the kids. I was directing Mulan Jr., the musical, and I don't know why, but I thought it was a great idea to teach eighth-grade boys how to fight with six-foot bamboo poles.
Yeah, not a great
And then
choice.
I turned my back for a little bit, and chaos ensued, and this was 50 kids all left to me because all the other teachers would take their coffee break, and they just gave them all to me. And so I finally couldn't take it anymore, and I said, quit.
Damn.
I should have said, quit messing around.
Yeah.
But I said, quit
Dean
around, the D rhyming with
Rick.
Mick. Okay? So I was like, what are you doing? Stop it. Quit. Blah, 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 blah. And one of the kids went and told their mom, and then their mom told the principal. And the principal was like, nice use of words, but.
Can't do that, Mary.
Can't do it.
Can't see here.
So Hagrid, my favorite character in this book,
yeah.
I see him and I'm like, oh, Hagrid, you can't tell kids if you're finished asking stupid questions. I appreciate it. I know where you're at. But teacher to teacher, don't say that.
Here's what I will say about the whole Hagrid thing and what they're about to do.
You would have not done well.
I would not. No, no chance. I really do like the fact that the first time that Harry actually feels seen in this book.
Ironically.
Good one. Good one. Is when Hagrid does say, no, you're not crazy. Like, no, this is a thing. And he learns about it and it helps justify, you know, Harry's, you know, for all intents and purposes, you know, visions of these horses, right? Mm-hmm. Like, up until this point, he thinks that he's just seeing them for funsies. And obviously, he's not. It's a real-life thing. And it takes until, like, Mary, we are just over the halfway point of this book. And
it's Christmas.
And Harry finally Almost. Has a connection outside of the trio, right?
Mm-hmm.
That is like, no, you're okay. This is okay. It's like, I know Dumbledore, like, well, I know that Dumbledore is ignoring him. I know that Harry has these visions where he feels like, you know, that he, or he has these feelings from his scar. He has these visions, the dreams rather. He can't help but feel othered, especially after the Dark Lord is not back, right? This is the first person that says, you're not othered. You are where I'm here for you and you're okay. Man, awesome stuff. And it's fitting that it's Hagrid's character. Do you think that the author fully intended that, Mary?
Yes, I do.
Why does it have to be Hagrid to do that, do you think? Why couldn't it have been Lupin, let's say? Or why couldn't it have been Moody, let's say? Or, you know, one of the people that are certainly allies of Harry, but not, you know, not there constantly or whatever. Like, why is it Hagrid at that point?
Because those people saw him in the beginning of the book, and that would have been way too early.
Yeah, but
we needed to have a half year of this strife.
Right. Fair. But again, just because it's been written this way, like we said that it had to be, you said that it was purposely done for Hagrid to be the one to tell him that, no, you're not crazy, right? I guess my suggestion would be, number one, it doesn't have to be at the halfway point. It doesn't have to be. And number two, if it does have to be at the halfway point, why is it Hagrid and not somebody else?
I think it's beautiful that Hagrid's the person who essentially rescued him from when his parents died. He's like the first person in the magical world to really come and bring him somewhere. Mm-hmm. I think it's poignant that Hagrid's the person that at the end of the books is there with him and carrying him, essentially as he's reborn, if mm-hmm. you think about it. And so here he is, the first person to help him feel seen in a different way where he's been feeling alone. He isn't actually alone.
Sure.
I don't know. I just think it's very poetic.
No, I agree. I'm wondering your thoughts on why it was Hagrid, you know, as opposed to somebody else.
Which makes me wonder, who has Hagrid seen die?
Because
he's not taking care of invisible creatures to himself.
I would probably agree with that.
Who has Hagrid seen die?
That's a great question.
And when? Who and when? Was it during the First Wizarding War?
I bet it was during the First Wizarding War. Yeah.
And would it have had to be humans that you see die? Could it have been magical creatures? Could it have been, you know, I don't know, but I just find it very interesting. And then we of course find out that Neville has been able to see them because his grandfather passed.
Hagrid witnessed several deaths over the course of his life, including his father, and could see Thestrals. So there you go.
There you go.
That's the reason why.
Neville. Neville is looking at these Thestrals.
Yes.
Not necessarily in creepy fear, but more just kind of mesmerized. And I love that we get to have a lot of growth in Neville in this particular chapter. This is a very important book for Neville as mm-hmm. well. And remember, he could have just as easily been the chosen one.
Sure.
That it was Voldemort himself that gave kind of that power and that presence to Harry, because Neville was born in July as well. Same age boy. It's just that Snape was the one who was like, oh, I know a baby who was born in July who, you know,
yeah.
could kill you.
Well, here's another question, because, you know, obviously we've had this conversation, I think, a fair bit amount, and this is widely, I think, purported throughout the entire Potterverse fandom, right? Fair. However, big however, could Neville really be the one? Like, could Neville really be the chosen one? Because is he as good of a wizard as Harry is? And my contention is, no. No, I don't think so. I don't think Neville has in him what Harry does.
He definitely doesn't have a Horcrux in him.
Exactly.
I'll tell you that. And how
That's
much
what she said.
Of that innate, magical, driven ability is because of the Horcrux. There are many moments in this book where we see slither and takes. We knew Tom Riddle was incredibly intelligent and charming and driven. So not to say that Harry wouldn't be Harry without the Horcrux, but just saying, there's a bunch of magical stuff inside of him.
Yeah, so then that brings up the next part of the conversation, right? Which is, and I think we all kind of knew this, but I think this takes it to the next level, which is Voldemort creates himself the prophecy that he's trying to prevent.
Because we don't know, we love Harry the moment we meet him in book one, but we don't know him as this magnificent, amazing wizard. He becomes that because he is driven and he needs to save himself. Book one, he finds out the guy that killed my parents still wants to kill me.
Sure.
If Neville Longbottom goes to Hogwarts and is told, "Hi, Voldemort wants to kill you," I love me some Neville Longbottom, but I think he would have learned Expelliarmus a bit quicker if he had the pressure of Voldemort coming after him.
Yeah. So then that part of the conversation naturally lends itself to that extension, which is, okay, what part is Harry and what part is Voldemort and what makes Harry, for the lack of a better term, compatible with Voldemort, right? Like, where does Harry end and Voldemort begin? What, like, that special line, right? Because we just got done saying, hey, maybe part of all of this is the fact that he's got a Horcrux in him. Maybe part of all of the greatness of him being the chosen one is that. But at what point do we have to turn around and recognize that Harry does have something special about him that helps facilitate the stuff with Voldemort?
I think it's now. I think it's in this book, and as Harry begins to learn more about his connection and that there is something that he has to fight, when he starts to realize the connection is something he wants to separate himself from. I'm not saying his great magical prowess is because of the Horcrux itself, but more because he had that pressure on him. I think Neville, we see in this chapter, Neville makes extremely good progress in this chapter alone, and he continues to throughout this book, especially when Bellatrix escapes from Azkaban. And so here we are, Neville's version of Voldemort, right?
Sure.
The woman who tortured his parents is now out. And so we get to see Neville's heroicism and drive go up significantly in this book as well. Mm-hmm. And we really start to see him, not necessarily on par with Harry Potter, but definitely amongst his peers.
Sure.
So that's why I'm saying, I think because Harry is Harry and had Voldemort and had the threat of him all this time, it forced him almost like you think the Paralympic athletes, you know, who like having missing limbs or having other issues doesn't necessarily mean they can't still be fantastic athletes. It means that they actually become stronger in different ways to help overcome that, to still be able to do these magnificent feats that I could never do.
Yeah.
I'd have to train a lot. Like, it's not that I could never do it. I can't do it now.
Right.
You know, but yet there's these people who are able to do incredible things in, for example, Paralympics with missing pieces of their body.
Right.
But they've been able to compensate. And so that's how I kind of feel with Harry, that like he had this, he had something missing. He's had his parents missing. He's had this chip on his shoulder. That's not even just a chip on his shoulder of Voldemort coming after him his entire life. Mm-hmm. And he's had to tell himself that I need to be stronger to survive.
Right. Right. And Kyle Ann here on Facebook, she says, but if Voldemort had gone after Neville's parents, might something similar have happened to Neville to get the Horcrux? Yes. Mm-hmm. And I think, Kyle Ann, that's the crux of our crux. That is the fulcrum of this conversation, right? Upon which it balances. What makes Harry able to be who he is? And does that reside within Neville, right? The way that I'm looking at it, Mary, and it's not quite an apples to apples comparison, but I think you'd get the idea if you look at it from this perspective. As humans, as people, we're alive, right? We're here, we're alive.
Unless we're in the Matrix.
I know, that's true. We're walking around, we're walking, talking, we're making a podcast right now. And then perhaps tomorrow, one of us passes away for whatever reason. You could put us back together. Like, you could put that person back together. You could reattach their limbs or give their brain electrical impulses, try to pump their heart back up. But there is just something that won't allow them, that person, to live again. Like, there's something in us. I don't know what it is. It's not, we can't just flip a switch and say, yay, yee, wee, you're alive again. That's something special in you, whatever it might be, is what that elixir of life is. And the way that I look at it is that, yes, could there have been an instance where Neville may have been the chosen one? And is there an instance where he does have a Horcrux in him? And is there an instance where maybe it elevates some of his ability? Sure. But with Harry, it just feels like there's that thing in him that is inexplicable. Mm-hmm. It just, like, that's what makes him alive. And that's what makes him able to mesh with Voldemort and the Horcrux.
Yep.
And that's why I'm saying, okay, if that's the case, where does that line, where does Harry end and where does Voldemort begin, right?
Oof.
So I don't know. It's just
We just went way super far. We went from wee snowballs to this. And I think that Tammy brings up a good point, of course, that Harry's raised by the Dursleys and Neville's raised by his gran. You know, so there's all these differences that did make them who they are.
Sure.
And change them. And I think it's just a really interesting thing to note, particularly in this chapter, that we get to see the growth of Neville and we get to see that he can see the Thestrals to once again bind him and Harry.
Mm-hmm.
And then Harry notes how far along Neville has come inside Dumbledore's army classes,
yeah.
That he really is doing a wonderful job. While we're here with the Thestrals.
Sure.
So Harry can see the Thestrals, Neville, Hagrid, a Slytherin boy. Question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Can Umbridge see the Thestrals?
Let's go to the Googlemobile one more time.
I think not. From reading this, I don't think she can. I think that she's questioning, you know, what are you teaching? And Hagrid has to say Thestrals, as if she can't see them, as if she doesn't see what's going on, because she comes after the Thestrals have already begun eating the cow meat. And then he explains a little bit about Thestrals, and she's asking people, who did you see die? And I feel like if she could see them, she would have a bit more humanity and not necessarily be asking people this question.
Wow.
Kind of like she hasn't lived through it, so she's naive a bit to it. And also that's why she's rude. Oh, well, you know that these things have been classified as whatever, because this is something she can't see, because this is something that she's unable to do that is still part of this magical world.
Mm-hmm.
What's your wow?
No, I
wasn't. Can't find it?
Well, I guess my wow is not even the interwebs have an answer to this question. Hold on, let me
let the puppy out.
Yeah, let me let the dog.
Yeah. Yeah, from what I understood of the text, it led me to believe she hasn't seen Thestrals, and also that's part of why she's so sassy, is because she can't see it. And if she can't see it and she can't understand it, then it must still be bad. And obviously it was classified. Whereas if she was able to participate, I really think she would have gone about it in a very different way.
Yeah, and I think there's textual evidence, Mary, of Umbridge drawing conclusions,
mm-hmm.
And shunning things that she chooses or either chooses or can't see or yeah. believe in. She shuns, like, even her dad, like, in her life, mm-hmm. right? She's not proud of where she comes from, so she rejects it.
The Thestrals, so I haven't had anyone close to me in kind of like an elder sense, you know, like close family members in that sense pass away. I did just have a close friend of mine pass away this winter, but I haven't had a parent pass away, a close grandparent. My close grandparents already passed away before I was born. So it's hard for me sometimes to fully understand things in movies or when there's conversations, whereas Blake, who lost his mother at a young age, is able to connect with these characters and is able to connect with people in that different way. And honestly, the Thestral situation, this is why I don't think Umbridge can see Thestrals, because I don't think she gets it. When I became of birthing age, I remember vividly I had a friend who had a miscarriage.
Mm.
And she told me, and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. But like, that was it. That's all I knew kind of what to say.
Do you see thestrals?
And like, no, not okay.
Okay. Sorry.
Thank you. But I just kind of was like, wow, that's so sad. I'm so sorry. And it didn't really click with me that much. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, a few years ago, we had two miscarriages in 1 year, and it shook me to my core. And it is a club that I do not wish upon anybody, but obviously many people have suffered infertility and loss. And I have often thought about reaching back out to this woman who I haven't spoken with in a decade.
Sure.
Just to say, I'm sorry that I didn't have the understanding and the weight of how big of a deal it was for you to tell me that. And that I couldn't have been there for you in a different way, because I couldn't understand the gravity. And when we went through the losses, I had some friends who the same way, that they couldn't understand it.
Sure.
And so I feel like with thestrals, that's why I really in my core, I just feel like Umbridge hasn't seen death. And that's not something bad about her, just like how for people who haven't gone through loss, it's not bad. It's not bad that I haven't lost my parents yet, but it's just a way that I can't fully, deeply, completely understand what it's like for you, for example.
Sure.
And for people who haven't lost a pregnancy or a child or dealt with infertility, it's hard. You know, if that hasn't been part of your family story, if that hasn't been part of your life, to like get it in that same exact way.
Sure, yeah.
And it's unique. Grief is just so unique, and it's so difficult. And I love that thestrals are a way for people to visually see a connection, you know?
Yeah. And Mary, I think what you just said, the grief is so unique in many, like in for everybody, and to everybody. And, you know, part of that grief in and of itself is implicit that you have a slice of humanity within you. Like you have a slice of empathy and sympathy, and you have that thing in you, right? And I bring that up because Christopher here on Facebook says, Umbridge has no humanity. It's why she's so evil, so horrible, so able to issue the harsh punishments she gives. And okay, so let's even say for the sake of an argument that she did see somebody die, right? And in a way that would allow her to see thestrals. Is she even capable of seeing thestrals? Mm. Because as Christopher is saying here, she really doesn't have any humanity.
Yeah.
And it's I think it's more not metaphorical, but it's more, I think, in your face that she doesn't have humanity. And the way that the author, I think, helps you come to that conclusion is that she's so toad-like in appearance. Mm. Right?
You know, bringing it back, you asked me, why Hagrid did this? Mm. Why was he
the one who told Harry about thestrals as opposed to anybody else?
And bringing it back to grief and how thestrals are a physical thing that you can see that can unite you if you have gone through loss like this, I believe that is why Hagrid chose thestrals. He says it straight up that this is generally an EWT level. That this is something they would be doing in the future. But he chose to do it now. And I think he chose to do it now because he knew Harry was dealing with grief, and that Harry felt like he was dealing with grief alone, and that this is a way for Harry to realize he's not alone, and for Hagrid to find out who else in this class, who else of his peers have seen death, so that maybe, once again, there's no therapist at Hogwarts.
And there should be.
So if he's able to get his peers in this class together, and Hagrid can say, who else can see the thestrals? Harry can realize that he is not the only 15-year-old in his year who has seen death. Mm-hmm. And that even if he doesn't want to talk that through with Neville or with Theodore, not the Slytherin, Harry can know in his heart other people have felt this.
Sure.
And I think that that is such a beautiful, deep thing. And I really think that that is why Hagrid chose to have this lesson.
Great take. I will co-sign on that take in a heartbeat.
Once again, my favorite character.
You know who also needs a therapist, Mary? Cho Chang. Cho Chang needs all the therapy that there is. I mean, man, oh man. And Harry is the one who is left to kind of help her process. Mm-hmm. And I think he's probably the least equipped person on the planet to help her process that information about Cedric and her feelings. And they're, nope, I don't think he's the right person. Would not be my first choice.
You would not be talking these feelings through, even though you are a Pisces.
Yeah. I mean, here's the issue. When you have those kind of conversations mm-hmm. with a girl, that means you are friend-zoned.
Yeah, but then she goes and snogs him.
I know, but like, but let's just think of the situation before the snogging begins. Mm-hmm. You have to know you're being friend-zoned in the center of the planet. She's talking to you about her dead boyfriend.
Oh, I don't think it was friend zone. She knew that Harry liked her. He asked her to the dance last year. She's always kind of had this special look in his eyes. It's just she had a boyfriend, okay?
Sure.
But it's not like she was married to Cedric. It's not like she said, you're the only person I can ever love. You know, Harry was still part of her heart love cluster.
Sure.
So it's totally okay.
All right, before we continue, let's just thank our partners in this show, shall we?
We shall. We want to make sure that you are all aware of this really amazing company called D&D Adventure Club. If you or someone you know wants to play Dungeons & Dragons but finds like those beginner starter sets way too overwhelming like I do, this is the thing that you need to check on out. It is a monthly subscription of Dungeons & Dragons Adventures built for beginners. Amazing stories, honestly very well designed, so it's fun for kids and for adults and families and anyone honestly wanting to start a new game of D&D. A new adventure arrives in your mailbox every single month. There's streamlined rules, amazing design, pre-built characters, and really allows you to pick up the game and start telling stories and playing this game right away. We do have a coupon code, so if you go to D&D Adventure Club, you can use Mary20, M-A-R-Y-2-0 at checkout. Mm-hmm. And you can either sign up for the subscription service or just choose it for standalone items. But we really, really recommend it. We've been able to play with our kids. And like I said, I found the original like beginner sets way too overwhelming. And this was awesome.
Yeah. Listen, I played D&D when I was a kid. And I think I played like a dumbed down version with my idiot friends. And so like I appreciated it. But when I got into the world of it with my son, I was like, nope. And then we got this thing in, and it really made it accessible for both he and I, like where I was able to be, where I was able to look at it and say, okay, I have a thing. Mm-hmm. I can play this thing with my kid, and we can all be happy. So trust me, if your child or even you are into D&D, you want to get this.
That's right.
All right. Make sure you check out the code at checkout, Mary20, M-A-R-Y-2-0. All right.
Cho snogging
the whole thing.
My favorite part, like you said, Blake, I mean, it is what it is, whether she's supposed to have the conversation with Harry or not. They snog. It's awkward.
Yes.
And then Harry goes back to the Gryffindor common room. And
this is magical. This is magical.
The fact that they do it bit by bit so beautifully also in the film makes my heart sore.
Yeah.
I love when that happens.
And the film, as you said, Mary, does this bit by bit. And from what I can remember, Mary, the conversation in the film is basically verbatim what they have in the book. And listen, I'm always one of those people that says, book is book, film is film, or show is show. Don't expect one to fit the other.
Mm-hmm.
Don't expect one to maneuver through the other. They are their own entities.
Mm-hmm.
I'm happy that the essentially word for word this conversation is kept. Because it is so well defined, the funniness and the awkwardness and that early teeny bopper feeling of like she was kissing me and then she was crying and what do we do? And then Hermione having to explain the emotions and just ripping on Ron. Like, and then even Ron coming up with this line at the end where he's like, no one can feel all that. Like, that's no way. And to a boy, I don't think, when in comparison, I think men have great feelings, but I think at many times there's a lot of complexity to feelings and emotions that some men just can't grasp. Like, it reminds me of men are from Mars and women are from Venus. You know what I mean?
Hmm. Not really.
No? Oh, well, I mean, there is a whole book about it.
No, I know the book. I'm just saying that you are so complex and you are the most important man in my life that I really don't find that to be true. I find that I know a lot of just people across the board who have lots of feelings and emotional depth.
Sure.
And then I have people across the board who are numb to that.
Right. No, that's fair.
So, yeah, I appreciate that. I think that that's why I like that this trio is diverse in the sense that there's like two boys and a girl, because they are able to show emotional complexities across the board.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think because you're a guy that you don't have, you're more emotional than me.
Yeah, no, like,
you're way more emotional than me.
I guess what I'm saying,
you cry all the time.
I do,
and you're
I do
so
cry.
Complicated. And it takes you like 3 days to digest your feelings.
Perhaps I didn't word it correctly. I think
that traditionally boys have not been taught how to express and digest and understand their feelings in society, particularly when this book was written. So if you're thinking about this being in the 90s, traditionally in the schools and in society, boys were not taught to digest.
Okay,
and
I think that's one
feelings.
Way to say it. That's certainly one way to say it. I think another way to say it, and one I think that's more apropos for this conversation, is that and I think you touched on this, Mary, is that there are some people that just don't have the capacity, you know, regardless of sex, but whatever. That there are some people that just don't have the capacity or the reasonable expectation to process all that kind of emotion, that they can't get their brain around it. And that makes sense. So, you know, like, sorry, I always have to have a thing in my hand. Like, I always have to have a pointer of some sort. If you're watching the video, I need like, but you know what? It needs to be like a pen. That's the thing. I think there are some people that just can't wrap their brain around having that amount of emotion all at once because they're just not wired that way. Regardless of all of this, what I'm saying is the fact that Ron is able to say that and kind of be with Harry in all of this, I think it's interesting that part of the conversation is there. It's meant to be lighthearted, and it's meant, I think, to be a little bit of levity. But I think there's a level of truth to it. And I think that's why this whole conversation works, because it is in the moment serious, but it's also meant to have a little bit of fun with all of it, but at the same time, it is very real.
I read a little bit more into this, that Ron has never kissed anybody because he's so questioning, what did it feel like? Whereas I took that Hermione did already have her first kiss, which
I'm pretty sure she did.
But like this to me, like, extra confirms, because she's not, what did it feel like a little bit more? She's just kind of a little bit more nonchalant, which of course would also be Hermione. But I vividly remember my friend who had her first snogging session.
Oh, okay.
She sat down on her bed. She had three of us over. It's like a photographic memory for me. She sat down in her bed. Yeah. I was on the floor. Another friend was next to her. Another friend was sitting at her desk chair. And she told us bit by bit. And I remember asking questions. And I was like, oh my God, you felt a tongue? Like, what did another tongue feel like? Ew, like, how do you breathe? It was so awkward and hysterical that it made such an impact on me that I remember parts of this conversation to this day. I remember her sitting up proudly and just being like she was telling us about heaven. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it was like, let me tell you everything.
I will. I'm here to educate you.
Exactly. And I was there, Ron, what did it feel like? You know? So reading this took me back so much. Do you remember? Were you the first of your friends to snog or were you not? Because if you don't remember, then I assume that you were.
I probably was.
There you go.
I probably was.
Or did you not talk about it with your friends?
We never really talked about it. Like, weren't like, hey, guess what
that's,
did?
You know,
like,
Pansy does. Okay. Yeah, no. That's how Pansy is. Okay. She doesn't kiss and tell.
No.
As Gryffindors.
Pansy does not betray that level of confidence.
Gryffindors are all about it. Friends, let me tell you about what to expect. So you too can be brave in your snogging endeavors.
Pansy don't kiss and tell.
Yeah, no, it made me think how, I wonder if this is how people feel.
I'm going to think of myself as Pansy Parkinson from now on.
I'm really proud of you in some weird way.
Oh, man. All right, so let's get to the dream, Mary, and what that all looks like. I would say that there obviously there is a lot. Harry waking up, like, vomiting, and
I loved Harry's dream.
Yeah, go ahead.
That's what they should teach us here, he thought, turning over on his side, how girls' brains work. Be much more useful than divination. And then he dreamed that Cho was accusing him of luring her there under false pretenses, that he had promised her 150 chocolate frog cards if she showed up. Harry protested. Cho shouted, Cedric gave me loads of chocolate frog cards, look! And she pulled out fistfuls of cards from inside her robes and threw them in the air. And then she turned into Hermione, who said, you did promise her, Harry. I think you'd better give her something else instead. How about your firebolt? And Harry was protesting that he could not give Cho his firebolt because Umbridge had it. And anyway, the whole thing was ridiculous. He'd only come to the DA room to put up some Christmas baubles shaped like Dobby's head. In case anyone wonders what it's like laying down next to me right before I go to sleep.
Oh, man.
This is how I talk.
This is Mary. All right.
Yeah.
For those of you who aren't married, okay, what you'll eventually realize is that your partner, you are subject to them in their most vulnerable moments. And who they are comes out at night. And Mary is a tornado. An absolute tornado. If there's something to talk about, Mary's talking about it way late at night, and she goes and goes and goes, and then all of a sudden, boom, down.
I will bring up the most deep conversation that will have your head spinning.
And then 5 minutes later, she's like, yeah, I'm going to bed.
I'll be like, what do you really think happens when you die? Like, how how long? And do you think there's, like, layers of it? Do you think, like, you slowly feel it, or do you feel good? And then I'm just doing it right now. I'm going on a tangent. And then Blake finally starts, I hook him, and he starts to think about it.
I know. And I'll say to her, Mary, I don't want to talk about this right now. And she'll be like, no, I want to know. Why don't you want to talk to me? Mary, it's not that I don't want to talk to you. This is a big thing. It's like 10:30 at night. I don't want to get in. No, Blake, I want to know.
I don't insist meanly. I'm like, but come on.
Come on, just tell me.
Like, just
and then
a little.
Finally, because I'm a sucker, I give in, and I start talking, and I start thinking about it, and then I get all worked up. And then I'm like, well, yeah, maybe this would happen. But what would happen if I... And then all of a sudden, within 3 minutes, I hear... and I look at her, And I'm like,
and now he can't sleep because he's deeply thinking about whatever it was you were thinking about.
I love you so much.
But I love train of thought. I love train of thought. I love reading it because it makes me feel normal. And I think that the author did a fantastic job. And then, of course, this dream changes.
Yeah.
And it feels so different. His body feels smooth, powerful, flexible, gliding between shining metal bars across dark, cold stone. He was flat against the floor, sliding along his belly. It was dark, yet he could see objects around him shimmering in strange, vibrant colors. He was turning his head. At first glance, the corridor was empty, but no, a man was sitting on the floor ahead, his chin drooping onto his chest, his outline gleaming in the dark. He put out his tongue and he tasted the man's scent in the air. He was alive but drowsing, sitting in front of a door at the end of the corridor. This is where it goes down, okay?
Yeah, oh yeah.
So we of course know that Harry is seeing things through Nagini's eyes, mm-hmm. wakes up, and I flippin' love how well this Gryffindor lot of fifth-year boys take care of Harry at this very moment.
It's very Gryffindor.
Oh, my gosh.
It's very Gryffindor.
They go and get help right away. I think it's Neville who goes and gets him help.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because Seamus and Dean are muttering. Okay, they're just kind of like judging a little bit, but they're like, this is really not okay.
Yo, did you
and
hear
Ron
that?
Is freaking out, and Neville is the one that goes to get help.
Yeah.
Bless your sweet little heart, Neville.
Neville.
He's like, Harry's having a nightmare.
I'm chosen one 2.0.
And then he tries to get out of bed. Ron pushes him back down. Dean and Seamus were still whispering somewhere nearby. What were they whispering, Blake?
Yo, did you hear that? That was messed up, yo.
No, they weren't saying, yo, this is Seamus and Dean.
Hey, mate, that was messed up, right?
My mom was right.
Kid's a freak.
And I love that he's able to say it's Ron's dad, mm-hmm. and that Harry knows the difference. He knows that this was real.
Yeah.
And it's, of course, because of how he felt in the dream that he had at the beginning of book four. He knows that some of these things are real and really happening. And
this is another great writing technique, too, from the author, right? Because we've already established this feeling in this sense already, though at the time it was a little bit more nebulous.
Mm-hmm.
The second time around, there is a factor, like you said, Mary, that it is more real. There is a factor that, oh no, this was taken up a notch. And when this happens again later on in the book, it's taken up to the point where Harry truly knows that it's real, yet at the same time it's not. Right, so it's that three beat. We're on number two right now, and it's fitting that halfway through the book we're on that second dream sequence.
Yeah,
it's really good stuff.
And McGonagall says one of the most important things: "I believe you, Potter."
Yeah, perfect, absolutely perfect. Oh. Right, it's the best thing that she can do.
Yes,
right, because, and it's also fitting that Harry feels seen at the end of this chapter. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, we have that established with Hagrid, and at the end we again have McGonagall saying it. It just reaffirms that Harry isn't crazy, that what Harry is going through is real, and that will inform the rest of his decisions as he moves forward in the rest of this book. How could it not? Right? How could when someone tells you, oh yeah, no, I get it, that's real, now you have the capacity to say, oh crap, I'm not crazy, I'm going to start trusting my instincts more, which sets him up for more failure later on in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Again, this is why this is my favorite book. It's my favorite book for this very reason. So, D. Smith on YouTube says, McGonagall has enough, and McGonagall, Umbridge has enough humanity to make a Patronus. So if she's seen someone die, I think that she could see the Thestrals. Just a thought.
Mm.
Marvin, your thoughts on that?
I personally do think that if she saw someone die, she could see the Thestrals. I appreciate Christopher's opinion on it.
Sure.
But I think that she could have seen it. Agreed. She can make a Patronus. She has the ability to be happy.
Yeah.
And have that bit. So I just think she hasn't seen someone die.
All right. It is, as we are recording this, 10:30 at night now, Marvin, and we've been here for an hour. So I'm going to make the executive decision. And no. What?
We keep going, man. I'm ready.
Different you're
perspective,
ready?
Anything else? Yeah, let's go.
Well, I'll make the executive decision. I will hold back on the listener feedback until next episode. But we can do different perspective.
Okay.
Okay. Because we have a lot of listener feedback.
Okay.
And I seriously want to get to it.
Okay.
But just I don't think tonight's the right night to do that. All right. Here we go. You ready?
No, I haven't picked a person yet. But here we go.
All right. Well, that's the best time.
I know.
When you pick it like as the music is happening.
That's right.
Here we go.
Holy cricket! You're Harry Potter. I'm Hermione Granger, and you are.
Tenebrous.
Wait, who were you?
I thought the sound effect would help.
Tenebrous.
I'm a horse. I'm a thestral. I'm Hagrid's favorite. I'm Hagrid's favorite thestral.
Mary, that's a deep
maybe
cut.
Maybe you can't.
That's a deep cut.
I've been Crookshanks before.
Yeah, but Crookshanks is like a character. Tenebris is just a freaking name that shows up out of nowhere and disappears to the ether.
I'm not just somebody, okay? I was the first Thestra born.
I'm a person.
Okay? It's a big deal. It's a big deal, man. Gosh.
Oh.
Okay, so, hi.
Hi, Tenebris.
No wonder you don't know me. You can't see me. Boo. I'm going to sneak up on you.
Hey, do you hear the voices? Where the
Pansy.
Where's that coming from?
Pansy Parkinson. Let me just eat this cow.
Too busy laughing at all the other people.
This is the best day of my life.
Okay, Tenebris, why?
Hagrid sang the gorgeous tune to me. I came on over.
Sure.
Told me I'm his favorite. Oh. Again. Again. Gold Again. Star. You know, he brought this half of a cow. Which half do you think? Front half? Back half?
Back half. Top half? Bottom half? No, back half. Back half. You want to know why? the most tender meats in the back.
Okay, good. Love it.
Sure.
He snuck me a little apple. Muna knows I like those apples. And, yeah, it was a good day. It was a good day, man.
Yeah,
There's this weird kid stares at me all the time with glasses.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to stare at you, Four Eyes. What you looking at? Why do you always look at me so weird?
You got a problem?
And he smiled at me today. It was wicked weird. In September, I was like, ugh. Yeah.
What's your problem, bro?
It's me, Tenebris.
Suddenly Tenebris is from Boston.
Anyway.
It's wicked weird.
You know, it is. I will tell you, it is wicked weird. Being a thestral.
Sure.
Because some people come to Hogwarts.
Yeah.
And they see you.
Okay.
And they just, you're always there. Like that Neville kid.
Yeah.
He's always seen me.
Yeah. You know what? He appreciates you.
He doesn't even know my invisible form. All
right. Right.
He just has always known
you're
me.
You're just there.
You're
seen.
But I'm not going to lie. It is messed up when a kid sees me for the first time.
Oh, yeah.
I like to mess with them. So I mess with that four-eyed kid.
I was just going to say, do you mess with
kids? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Kind of looked right back at him.
Yeah.
That's me.
Gave him the weird eye.
Yeah. And I told all my friends.
Twitching a little
bit.
The
ones who aren't the favorites. Yeah. That they don't have names. He didn't even name them. That's how little he likes them. They don't even all get names.
Yeah, they don't even need names.
No.
They're just Thestral 1 and Thestral 2.
And then some toad shows up
telling me
I'm dangerous. You want to know what I did then?
What's that?
I ate even fiercer because she couldn't see me.
Yeah.
I then showed her my butt.
I was just going to say, did you have a little...
I lifted my tail and showed her my butt, but she couldn't see it.
That's a level of disrespect that I just don't know.
I don't care, Pansy. I don't care. I'm invisible. You don't even know what I'm doing right now. Okay?
Maybe you're lifting your tail.
Tenebris. Peace. You're welcome, Blake.
Good job, Marvin. And... scene. All right, you ready to close this bad boy out?
Yes, I am.
Let's do it.
I want to know something super sad.
Sure. What is that?
Originally, the author killed Arthur Weasley in this moment.
Oh, I've heard about this.
Yeah. So raise a glass that Arthur's still alive because I love that man.
Yeah. What was the reason why she couldn't do it?
Probably because people were like, this is terrible. This is like written for children, please.
Yeah, but she just ended up killing Cedric. I feel like that's a worse thing.
No, she ended up killing Remus and Tonks instead. She needed some kind of like parental figures to die.
Well, sure, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, she already did James and Lily, so you got to follow it up with somebody else.
Leave some parents. Who are you, Pixar? Come on. Ay, ay, ay. So, friends, thank you so much for tuning in. We are excited to delve into more episodes of the Potterverse with you. And friends who have written in, we will be getting to your emails in the next one.
Yes.
On that note, my name is Mary.
My name is Blake.
Pansy. Mischief managed.
Pansy, she has the emotional range of a teaspoon.
She does.
Totally does.
She's not a Pisces like you and Ron.
That's why she's just going to rank on you all day. It's her favorite. It's like Smiling's buddy's favorite, ranking on you is Pansy's favorite.
Yeah.